Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Novel.
A listener note, this episode contains violence and content that some listeners might find distressing. Previously on Deliver Us from Ervil.
Ervil thought that if he got rid of Joel, he could just move in and take leadership with Joel's people. Well, it didn't work. That's the problem.
The prophecy says the streets of Salt Lake will run in blood after they've heard my message.
That's when the LeBarons showed up. Things got pretty rough after that.
There was a string of threats that if he didn't repent and follow the true prophet, he was going to die.
Ervil was their leader. They thought they were going to go out and save the world.
I called my mother. She said, "Honey, your daddy's been shot." And I said, "Is he dead?" And she said, "Yes, he's dead."
As long as I can remember, I've wanted to be a writer. To tell stories of other people's lives. To take readers on a journey into a world they might otherwise never visit. My mom even has this photo of me as a baby, holding a pencil, ready to write. I grew up 60 miles south of Reno, Nevada, near the Carson River, at the end of what's called the 40-mile desert. When I was little, my mom and I, we'd go into town to buy these big rolls of newsprint. And so while my brothers were outside catching lizards under sagebrush, I was inside, making my own newspapers from articles cut out of magazines. It helped me connect with the outside world, which seemed distant, busy, chaotic, fascinating. And when I look back, many of the stories I was drawn to early in my career, without even realizing, were stories where I was trying to do something for myself. To figure out my place in Mormonism, and the place of faith in the broader world. I guess I'm still trying to figure that out. It's one reason I'm doing this podcast. Journalism and faith can be fundamentally at odds. Because journalism, when done right, is a search for truth, no matter where it leads you. And in my case, reporting on stories like this one, it led me further away from my faith, away from Mormonism. Now, that's not the case for everyone. In fact, for some journalists I've met, their faith inspires them. It's the animating force in the work they do.
Is it Jess or Jesse?
These days, journalist Del Van Atta lives in a big colonial-style house in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Lovely home.
Dale has had quite the career as a journalist, most of it at the Washington Post. He broke the Iran-Contra scandal back in the 80s. He's interviewed six presidents. He was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize five times.
I got some stuff you might be interested in. You want to see?
Yeah, let's see it.
It's a bright day in September. Dale takes me away down into his basement to see some mementos from that career taking millions of readers on journeys into worlds they otherwise might never visit. That dream I had as a kid.
This is the interview with Reagan. He begged me not to run the story.
He shows me souvenirs from war reporting.
Constant gunfire the whole time you're there.
Contraband from trips to the Middle East.
Yeah, Sir Arafat gave me a live cluster bomb. I'm presuming he didn't know what it was, and I brought it back to the U.S.
A picture of him headed to the South Pole.
This is an Usyk from Alaska. It's what they use for clubs. It's a walrus penis bone.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot to carry around.
And then, right at the back, behind some boxes, a framed poster behind glass of a movie star.
That's the picture.
The unlikely spark that started it all.
I had early decided that writing was a good thing because I wrote to the up-and-coming star Olivia Hussey. She said that was the most beautiful letter she had ever gotten, and we dated. So I thought, you know, I wasn't that great looking a guy. And I thought, well, if writing can bring me someone like her, this is a good thing to do. So I became editor of my high school.
When Dale says he isn't a great looking guy, what he's saying is he's short. He's a hobbit-like, a modern day Bilbo Baggins. He's got an impish grin. His eyes twinkle with the same delight or mischief, like a guy about to go on a grand adventure. You immediately like him, trust him, let your guard down, and spill your secrets.
All right, now you can strike the sound down. I will speak no more forever.
From the start, Dale got his kicks challenging the powers that be. That was his mission. It's what makes him such a great reporter. But when it came to Irville LeBaron, it's also what nearly got him killed. Dale's career started out in the same place mine did. Both Mormons, both studying journalism at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. I remember walking into that campus paper newsroom. It was humming with energy and intensity. It felt so important, momentous. By 1977, Dale was working at the Deseret News, one of two Salt Lake City dailies. That's actually where I work today. Back then, the newsroom looked like your classic TV set newsroom. Open plan, reporters with rolled up sleeves hunched over typewriters, editors yelling across the room about a blown deadline, the police scanner beeping and squawking. In the spring of 77, Dale was a young reporter. He had just been appointed to lead a new investigative team, and his life was about to change forever. It started with a man from his local ward. That's what Mormons call a parish. He approached Dale at his home with a tip.
He had lost his wife and his daughter to polygamy. Somebody had converted them and they disappeared and he was trying to find them.
Sort of like the experience Glenn Chinoff had when the LeBarons turned his life upside down and took his family away to Mexico. Only this guy didn't even know where his family had gone. He was trying to track them down. Maybe Dale could help him.
And then he told me about a group of polygamists that were in town to kill someone. And he told me about Irville LeBaron.
It was May 8th, 1977.
And I went the next day to my managing editor and said, I know we've ignored these polygamist groups for years, and I understand, you know, we're a church-owned newspaper.
The Mormon Church owns the Deseret News, and back then, it didn't cover any of the polygamous groups. Why would the church want its paper to bring any attention to an aspect of its past, polygamy, they'd rather people forget?
And I said, can I start on this? He said, why? I said, well, if they've turned to violence, if one group's turned to violence, we need to kind of clean up our own offshoot house.
offshoot house, an interesting way of putting it. These groups have the same roots, same beliefs, same scriptures as mainstream Mormons. So if they're out causing mayhem, it's on us to expose it, to clean it up.
I said, we need to be leading the charge. And he agreed.
But Dale was unaware how quickly the clock was ticking. The next day was May 9th. Dale called his sources inside the Salt Lake Police Department. The LeBarons. Have you heard of them? I think one of them is in Utah right now, planning to kill someone. The police said, we'll look into it. But by May 10th, 1977, the clock had already counted down.
Murray City Police tonight say they have no leads yet on who the two women were who entered the office of polygamous leader Rulon Allred yesterday and shot him dead. Among the suspects of those who planned the possible assassination are leaders of two rival polygamous groups.
From the teams at Novel and iHeartRadio, this is Deliver Us from Herbal. I'm Jesse Hyde. Chapter 4, The Hunt. Tuesday, May 10th, 1977 was the day Rena Chenoth shot dead Rulon Allred, on the orders of Ervil LeBaron. And Dale Van Atta heard the fallout in real time. He was in the newsroom.
The police scanner, which I was monitoring, said a naturopath in Salt Lake had been killed by two young women shot several times in Murray, a suburb of Salt Lake.
Dale instantly connected the dots. This was the murder he'd been warned all about. And what Dale felt in that moment?
All right, I'm going to be honest. I was elated. I was excited. I thought, holy cow, have I got a scoop on this.
Dale had a scoop because what he could hear monitoring the police scanner was that the police were jumping on the wrong leads.
The initial read by the police was that it was a drug heist gone bad.
But Dale knew that Rulon Allred was a homeopathic doctor who only used natural remedies. And he wasn't just any homeopathic doctor either.
Basically, the Allreds were the largest, potentially most lucrative of all the polygamist subgroups.
In other words, for a certain predator, potentially a very desirable target. A predator like the one he'd just spent the previous 48 hours looking into. Because ever since Dale had received that tip from that man in his ward, he'd been learning as much as he could about Ervil LeBaron. Everything he was hearing about the murder in Salt Lake was starting to make sense, in a way that both horrified and energized him.
I went into the managing editor again and I said, I think this is Ervil. I think this is what I was told 2 days ago. So I need to start pursuing that. The police will come around soon if it was him.
For Dale, this was one of those rare moments where life kind of feels like a movie.
This is the turning point for me. This is the come to Jesus moment. This is when I knew I was going to be a crusader.
It might sound like hyperbole or a bit grandiose, but the story unfolding in front of Dale was a kind of coming together of the two central strands of his life into one singular mission.
I was combating bad forces, whether religious or otherwise, and turning the rock over and bringing sunlight to bear.
Dale, who had converted to Mormonism as a teenager, really believed deeply in its doctrines. He now understood that his scoop was in fact a murder that twisted his faith into something unrecognizable, something monstrous.
Ervil was not so much an offshoot of the Latter-day Saint Church, even though he used some of the scriptures. He was really saw himself as Moses. He was really Old Testament. It sent chills up and down my spine.
What Dale did next, it was unconventional. especially for a journalist sitting on the cusp of a huge story. He went and shared what he knew with the cops. Well, one cop in particular.
One great detective named Dick Forbes, who has died.
He passed away.
I'm pretty sure he died. We were sharing information confidentially for quite some time.
You'll hear a lot about Dick in this series, because at this point in time, Dick Forbes had also started to investigate Ervil, had become equally concerned by what he was learning. So Dale met with Dick and proposed an unusual partnership.
I made it clear to Dick when we sat down, look, I need your help. I'm looking for a partnership. I will never embarrass you. I will never betray you. I think we can do this together. And without over-dramatizing it, we are in a fight against evil.
Dale didn't stop there. He had an even more unusual request for the cop. Dick was going to have to start going to church again.
Dick was an inactive member of the church because he couldn't kick his habit of smoking and didn't feel he was worthy to attend.
Smoking is forbidden in the Mormon church.
I said, forget that. Go back to church. You're going to need help. And the police force is not enough on this.
This wasn't some moral scolding. Dale was saying that if the police wanted to use Dale's sources within the fundamentalist community, they needed to be able to talk their language, their terminology of doctrine and scriptures.
I said from the beginning, the only way you're going to get Ervil is to break someone substantial in his group. Things are going to have to happen that other cops might say are serendipity or luck. But as a Latter-day Saint, you know, if you're looking for help, you need to be right.
Latter-day Saint, that's what mainstream Mormons prefer to be called.
And the only way you're going to do that is to be knowledgeable about the scriptures. If you're just a regular cop and you can't discuss DNC 85 with him smartly, you're going to lose out. He's going to just think you're ignorant.
DNC 85, or Doctrine and Covenants 85, is the Mormon scripture fundamentalists say predicts the coming of the One Mighty and Strong.
I brought the scriptures with me. Any other cop would say, forget the scriptures and everything else. Just tell me, how does he do the murders and who does he know and everything? But he listened to me and he agreed.
Dale and Dick both saw it. This was how to get to Ervil. You get inside his cult. Flip informants.
He quit smoking. That's how committed he was as a cop. He really believed that he was making a difference, and he was. He was a great detective. But now he incorporated this religious aspect because he knew that was what it was going to take to bring Ervil down and some of his followers, the ones that actually did the murders.
So while Dick Forbes headed back to church, Dale set off to get the inside scoop on just what Ervil had been up to all these years. After all, his day job wasn't to stop Ervil. He needed to break news. And to do that, he was headed to Mexico. Maybe he could hear it all from the horse's mouth. Dale set out to meet Ervil face to face. That's coming up after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
As Del Van Atta began investigating the murder of Rulon Allred in May of 1977, he had no idea who had pulled the trigger, or even who Rena Chinoth was. But he felt sure Ervil LeBaron was behind it all. Dale began swapping information with Detective Dick Forbes, and that certainty only grew.
I started calling down to Mexico and reached Ervil's youngest brother, who had taken over the church. I think it was Thursday night, the day before the Allred funeral.
Dale had reached Verlin LeBaron, Joel and Ervil's younger brother, just before he made his trip up to Utah, in what Ervil had hoped would be Verlin's last day on Earth, the day before his planned ambush.
He did not know at the time that the purpose of killing Rulon Allred was so Ervil could kill him, so he would know he would be at the funeral.
Verlin told Dale the story of Colonial LeBaron, about Ervil killing his own brother Joel.
I said, I've never heard of any of this. He said, no one has. No one was interested before. But now, perhaps with this murder in Salt Lake, a very unique, odd murder, they will. And then he told me about this raid that was made by Ervil's people, just horrendous to me, in a Baja California village named Los Molinos.
The massacre, the firebombing, the shootings, the murder of two innocent young men.
I thought, I got to get this guy. And I went into the editor and said, I'm off on this. The team can do the rest of it. And I became so committed.
Dale started to learn other things about Ervil's cult, the identities of some of Ervil's inner circle. And he started to hear whispers about the cult's movement in the years following the Los Molinos massacre. We're talking between 1975 and 77 here, a period where the cult had been moving across America, living and hiding, house to house, town to town. And in between, well, quite a few people who came into the orbit of the cult had gone missing. Perhaps the most shocking, stomach-turning of all the stories Dale heard was about a woman named Becky. Becky was Ervil's daughter, one of 13 children born to his first wife, Delfina. Becky had inherited Ervil's gift of visions, saw things, heard things, blurted out things she shouldn't say. But the cult did not see her as a prophet. They saw her as a loose cannon. Dale began to hear rumors about just what had happened to Becky.
Anyone who opposed him deserved to die, including a daughter. And it was just a question of how many people he could order be killed. That there was really going to be no stopping him.
Dale knew Becky had been married off to another one of Ervil's inner circle, Victor Moneyman Chinoth, Ervil's Minister of Finance. He was Glenn Chinoth's younger brother, who you heard from in episode 3. An older brother of Rena Chinoth, all part of that interlacing of blood ties that bound Ervil's crime family. Anyway, Vic Chenoth was also a person of interest to the police at this point, but not just because of Becky's disappearance. It was because the polygamous other wife, who was called Nancy, had been picked up by the cops for information on the Rulon Allred murder. So Dill called up Vic Chenoth, the money man.
Yeah, Dill Marietta with the Deseret News.
Yeah.
You understand that you said your wife was in town while this Allred thing was happening. Why did they arrest her?
I have no idea, sir.
Dill keeps the question simple. Ask the sort of things a reporter asks a cagey source. Just keep the conversation going. Keep them from hanging up.
You have seen and known Ervil LeBaron in the course of your life. What was he like?
Not near like everybody thinks he is, in my opinion.
Really? Well, how does everybody think he is?
Blood guts and everything, that's all I've ever heard.
That's Vic defending Ervil, saying he isn't all blood and guts.
When was the last time you talked to Ervil?
I'd say approximately 30 days ago.
Do you know where he is now?
I have no idea. I don't know where he was then.
Dill keeps reeling him in.
And I think that there was a fundamentalist that said that for some reason had information that you were supplying money to the Church of the Lamb of God. Really? Did you ever belong to his church?
No, sir.
Vic says he has nothing to do with Ervil's church. Dill knows he's lying.
I'm not trying to be evasive.
No.
You're asking me a lot of questions. I'm not that religious a person.
That's not that religious a person. Vic lying again. But then he reverts to a trick the LeBarons would use over and over with the police in their many, many interactions with them in the years to come. Vic kind of turned the table. He started to gently mine Dill for information. What did he know about the investigation into the cult?
Did they have a warrant for
him? I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out. I can't understand how they all of a sudden came up with a warrant for your wife.
Dill tried to change the conversation, lighten the mood.
Do you ever remember him saying anything funny or doing something funny? I mean, he kind of got his brothers have a lot of wit. I wonder if he did too.
A lot of wit? Like the brother who was building spaceships?
A lot of what?
Wit.
After circling around and around, Dill sensed his time with Vic was drawing to a close. So he went in hard. What he really wanted to know.
The last question I wanted to ask you is, have you ever been a polygamist?
Everybody knows I have two wives, and we have one now, one with.
Vic says everyone knows he has two wives. But now he only has one. Which led Dill to wonder, where's Ervil's daughter, your other wife, Becky?
The other one isn't deceased, is she?
No.
Just a divorce.
No, she isn't deceased, he says. Just divorced. Vic is clearly becoming rattled by Dale's questioning. And by how much Dill knows.
I don't really give a shit about Ervil.
Mm-hmm.
I do care about my wife, and I sure feel like that I'm paying a hell of a price for ever having an association with
him. Dill had heard enough.
Okay, sorry to call you so late.
Dill is a meticulously organized reporter. I've seen the boxes of notes and materials he assembled on the LeBarons. He'd use index cards to track leads, put them in a little cardboard box he tied with a shoestring. And the leads kept piling up, the way they do in cop shows. Next up, Dill called Dan Jordan, the one-time French missionary who had killed Joel LeBaron at Ervil's bidding, and who wrote some of Ervil's most incendiary propaganda. Dill tracked down Dan's number and began probing him for information.
Prior to the Allred murder years ago, when apparently you authored some pamphlets with Ervil in Colonia LeBaron around.
But Dan was no fool.
Let me say this. I would like to make a statement later on, but I would rather not make a statement or have any comment at this time because of the obvious implications affecting the case and so on. I will be making a statement at some future time, or at least I intend to.
In other words, no comment. But
But Dale was now circling his main target, Herbal, getting closer and closer. And as he did, his reporting was finding a wider audience. The national press was now publishing his stories. But he still needed to get to the one man at the center of it all.
I needed to interview Herbal. And I even wrote a piece for Time magazine because they started to get interested. And a lot of others started to get interested. And knowing that, an interview with Herbal was very important. And it might be reasonable to ask, considering the number of murders that had been committed by this time, whether that was a dangerous thing to do. My instinct was no. I felt he was a coward. And he never did anything himself. He always had other people do it. And he would never act precipitously. If I was interviewing him, it wouldn't happen there. I could worry about it later.
But there was no way Dale's editors were going to send him down to Mexico.
You're talking about some serious expense. They did not have a vision of what this story would be. So I spent my own money. My wife and I had $2,000 in the savings, and she agreed to let me use it all. We hired a pilot, brought his two sons, who were ex-missionaries, spoke Spanish.
First stop was the Chihuahua Desert.
I went down Colonial LeBaron first, and I talked to his mother and his sister, Esther, who was kind of the family historian. I remember having a lot of discussions of polygamy and how do these other wives put up with it. And Verlin said to me, it's easier. They don't expect as much.
When Dale arrived in Colonial LeBaron, 5 years had passed since Herbal had killed his brother Joel. But if he had expected the whole town to hate Herbal, Dale was in for a surprise.
I was struck by how they were still defending Herbal, even though he had killed their most beloved brother and son, Joel.
Dale was experiencing those same emotions I had seen in Joel's son Adrian and his wife Deli on the hills over Los Molinos. These split loyalties of the people who had once seen Herbal as family and were now watching on in confused terror as his cult grew, as he carried out more and more extreme acts. But then he got a break, a possible location for Herbal.
South of Mexico City. I had an address and everything. I went there. He wasn't home.
Dale had arrived moments too late.
It was where he was staying. Several of the neighbors said he left a couple hours ago.
Dale left Mexico without the interview he wanted, but his notebook was now overflowing with new leads. And a picture was starting to emerge in the jigsaw puzzle of Herbal and his cult. It was a terrifying portrait of a cult leader who seemed to have a genuine hold on his followers.
He was the patriarch. He was the boss. He was an inveterate ladies' man. And for some reason, women were really attracted to him, and he could charm them. Irene, his sister-in-law, described first seeing Herbal. At the time, they were all poor and would have overalls with one rope on one side going to the other side and barefoot. And she said he had a split in his crotch, which had never been repaired, and he didn't wear underwear. So you saw all of Herbal. And yet she still said after that, he was very handsome, and I still found myself attracted. Plus he would, you know, it's almost poetic if he starts talking visions and revelations. It's manna for those that are feeling persecuted and isolated, that here's someone with a real vision. So he was trying to marry everyone.
And of course, it wasn't just wives that he was recruiting as disciples.
He found vulnerable people who secretly wanted to be loved, part of a community, and wanted to amount to something which no one told any of them before they would ever do.
People searching for significance and meaning in their lives. These were the recruits whose identities Dale was uncovering. People like Lloyd and Don Sullivan.
He found people who perceived themselves as failures and gave them a sense of mission, even though it came to killing eventually. All part of the same mission.
As for Herbal,
Somewhere along the line, Dale concluded, his thirst for power, for adoration, had consumed him, sent him down paths of wickedness, violence, and murder.
He was a man who craved power and was very lustful. So how do you get power? How do you sleep with as many women as you can? I mean, polygamy appealed to him because all he had to do was marry them in some whatever ceremony. Maybe, maybe not take care of them. That wasn't a big issue with him. He was driven by the need to be adored, revered, loved by men and women.
As the summer of 77 went on, the stories of murders and disappearances attributed to Ervil and his followers continued to come across Dale's desk. There was the disappearance of Robert Simons, a rival prophet. He disappeared after a game of pool with some of the cult in 75. That same year, Noemi Zarate, the plural wife of Bud Chenoth, she had vanished without a trace after a car journey through the San Pedro Mountains with two of Ervil's wives. One of those wives, she was called Vonda White, was linked to the death of another of Ervil's group, a former army vet who was instrumental in planning the Los Molinos attack, a giant of a man named Dean Vest. He'd been shot to death in 75 in a house he shared with Vonda White and some other cult followers. Dale wondered, could all these killings really be Ervil's crime family?
I'm curious as a young reporter what that felt like. I would imagine it's exhilarating, but also a little scary. I mean, were you scared at all? Did you recognize the danger of what you were doing?
No. I would call it youthful ignorance, which followed me for quite some time in my career. Now I'm kind of appalled at the things I did without thinking of the consequences, especially to my wife and kids.
I can see why he'd feel that way, because his investigation hadn't gone unnoticed by the cult.
Ervil had early on identified me as a major enemy. He knew. He got word from a number of people. It wasn't just the Deseret News, the stories he was getting there, but Time magazine. Of course,
Time was one of the biggest magazines in America back then. And as the story was getting out, Ervil was angry. And so, at his orders, disciple Lloyd Sullivan was dispatched to pay Dale Van Atta's family a visit.
He had gone out to my house and was supposed to murder me. So, as it turned out, in retrospect, I was in danger.
Lloyd brought his son, Don Sullivan, along too. They waited for hours, but Dale didn't come home. He was in the newsroom, working late again. He wouldn't find out for a few years just how close he'd come to being another one of Ervil's victims.
It was only after the fact that I realized how dangerous it may have been. But for me, how do I put it and still sound humble?
Don't worry about humble.
The mission was greater than the danger. It was a crusade. This was an evil man, somebody I felt needed all my energy to bring to task because no one had done it before.
But Dale Van Atta wasn't the only journalist beating a path to Ervil's door. That's coming up after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach, Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are we rolling then? Should we go?
So you can go?
Because they can edit.
This is Lynn Packer. He's a legendary investigative reporter in Utah, a contemporary of journalist Dale Van Atta, kind of his TV equivalent.
I actually prefer the old television method when we're looking at each other. So why don't you let me set it up?
Like Dale, also a member of the Mormon Church, went to the same Mormon university as Dale. But he'd actually heard of the LeBarons way before Dale had.
When I was on my LDS mission, and for missionaries, it was synonymous with Satan, with the devil, that the devil had somehow influenced these missionaries to adopt the doctrine of polygamy.
For years after this, Lynn put the LeBarons out of his mind, moved back to Salt Lake, got a job at KSL, an NBC affiliate. He was making his name in TV news when a decade later, back in Salt Lake City, someone gave him a tip about a story. A local radio host was building a sort of unusual enterprise at his home.
A flying saucer factory. I said, a flying saucer factory? Yeah, he said, this flying saucer company had an illustration of the flying saucer, and he told me that it was incorporated by Ross LeBaron. And so I went there, met Ross LeBaron for the first time. It was a small, really old house in Salt Lake County, certainly in sort of a rundown area. He was happy to see me. He wanted the publicity. He took me to the backyard where he was running flying saucer tests. And he said, of course, this is just a model. The big one will be much bigger because it has to fly to another location to pick up Jesus, to fly Jesus back to the earth, because the Bible, the scriptures say that's how he's going to return, and it's up to us to develop the flying saucer so that he can return to the earth for the last days.
Lynn cut the TV package, a quirky novelty piece. The sort right before the anchors toss it to sports with a little knowing chuckle. But no one was laughing by the time Lynn was next on air to talk about the LeBarons.
Tonight, Lynn Packer and Duane Cardall. A glimpse at Irva LeBaron's former territory near Ensenada, Mexico. This frightening cult leader. Now on Dimension 5.
Good evening. The notorious Irva LeBaron.
By the time of the 1977 Allred murder, Lynn was the station's lead investigative reporter. And after that killing, he'd also set off to Mexico to do some digging into Irva and his cult. But like Dale, he arrived too late. To speak to Irva, that is. Instead, he had to settle for an interview with a fellow reporter, someone who had managed to get in a room with the elusive cult leader.
Lori Beckland is a reporter for the Los Angeles Times and the only journalist we've heard about who's interviewed Irva LeBaron. The interview took place in August 1976.
He was a very large figure. We were sitting in a really hot Ensenada jail cell, and the whole room smelled like onions, just tremendously onions. And it was Irva LeBaron. I think he'd just eaten a lot of onions. And he was just sweating profusely, just more than I've ever seen anybody perspire in my whole life. And as he spoke, it was with hesitation at first because I don't think he wanted to talk to me. But later, It was as if he were trying to convince me. He was speaking like a preacher, very strong voice, a figure that seemed to be larger than his physical presence.
Lynn and his TV news colleagues continued their reporting. They heard the same rumors as Del Van Atta about some of the disappearances linked to Ervil's disciples.
Robert Simons, who had been seen earlier with Ervil LeBaron, disappeared, leaving his home with one of LeBaron's followers.
Like that rival prophet, Robert Simons.
Our information is that he was last seen with a disciple of the Church of the Lamb of God. Neither this disciple or Mr. Simons has been seen since.
And the giant, Dean Vest.
Add to that incident another which occurred last year in San Diego. Then a man named Dean Vest was murdered. Two women are suspects. Vest had been a follower of Ervil LeBaron. That case, like the Simons disappearance, remains unsolved.
As the summer of 77 passed, journalists like Dale and Lynn continued to bring Ervil LeBaron to a national audience. The press had given Ervil a nickname, the Mormon Manson. He had that kind of notoriety with the public now. But despite all this, Ervil LeBaron's cult of around 100 followers remained intact. Well, that's how it might have appeared from the outside anyway. But while Dale and Lynn had been investigating, the cops led by Detective Dick Forbes were building their own momentum, gathering evidence, identifying concrete suspects for the killings of Rulon Allred, rival prophet Robert Simons, and Dean Vest. And now the police were about to make a major breakthrough, something they'd been after from the very start of their investigation. They were about to flip someone from within the cult. Arrests at the heart of Ervil LeBaron's cult were about to begin.
It started with a raid on Los Marinos on December 26, 1974, and the events that led up to that. What is your recollection of the strategy and the planning that went into that and of the actual raid itself?
Someone who was about to blow the whole Ervil LeBaron case wide open.
The Lord wants his son, man upstairs. That is the most important thing, that we eliminate this person.
That's coming up in the next episode of Deliver Us from Ervil. Deliver Us from Ervil is hosted by me, Jesse Hyde, and written and reported by me, Leona Hamid, and David Waters. Production from Leona Hamid and David Waters. Sean Glynn and Max O'Brien are executive producers. Lena Chang and Megan Oyinka are researchers. Mariana Gongora is our field producer. Fact-checking by Danya Suleiman and Sona Avakian. Production management from Cherie Houston, Frankie Taylor, and Charlotte Wolf. Austin Mitchell is our creative director of production. Michael E. Rao is our managing editor. Gavin Haynes is our head of development. Willard Foxton is our creative director of development. Sound design, mixing, and scoring by Nicholas Alexander and Daniel Kempson. Music supervision by Nicholas Alexander and David Waters. Our music is composed by Julian Lynch. Special thanks to Scott Anderson, Scott Carrier, Del Van Atta, Pippa Smith, Saskia Edwards, Matt O'Mara, Katrina Norvell, and Beth Ann Macaluso, Oren Rosenbaum, Shelby Shankman, and all the team at UTA. For more from Novel, visit novel.audio.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.